الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونؤمن به ونتوكل عليه ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله السلام عليكم ورحمة الله إن شاء الله we hope this will be the last segment of Surah Nur. We have covered two previous sessions on Surah Nur, and we hope to make this the last segment. There are four ayahs which I consider very important, so I will quickly rehearse what was said in regards to these ayahs. In ayah 21 of Surah Nur, Allah said, يَا لَدِينَ آمَنُوا لَا تَتَّبِعُوا خُطُوَاتِ الشَّيْطَانِ فَإِنَّهُ يَأْمُرُ بِالْفَحْشَى وَالْمُنْكَرِ. O you who believe, do not follow the evil footsteps of the shaitan. Now after Allah told you in the Quran not to follow the footsteps of the shaitan, Allah is now giving you the reason why He has commanded you not to follow the footsteps of the shaitan. فَإِنَّهُ يَأْمُرُ بِالْفَحْشَى وَالْمُنْكَرِ. Because he, the shaitan, commands you with indecency and all types of sins, munkar. وَلَوْلَا فَضْلُ اللَّهِ عَلَيْكُمْ وَرَحْمَتُهُ مَا زَكَّى مِنْكُمْ مِنْ أَحَدٍ أَبَدًا وَلَكِنَّ اللَّهَ يُزَكِّي مَنْ يَشَاءُ وَاللَّهُ سَمِيعٌ عَلِيمٌ. So Allah Ta'ala said, don't follow his footsteps because he commands everything which is evil, indecency, illegal sexual intercourse, in brackets, and munkar, disbelief, kufr, shirk, bid'ah. And Allah Ta'ala said, to do evil and wicked deeds, to speak or to do what is forbidden in Islam, to speak about Allah without having any knowledge, to introduce bid'ah into al-Islam, nifaq, all these things the shaitan has commanded. And had it not been for the grace of Allah and His mercy on you, not one of you would ever have been pure from sins. But Allah purifies whom He will, and Allah Ta'ala is all-hearing, the all-knowing. So Allah Ta'ala is hereby telling you that your Iman is a gift from Him, Allah. So Iman is a gift from Allah Ta'ala, and tazkiyatun nufus, the purification of the soul from kufr and shirk, nifaq. This is a gift from Allah Ta'ala, and Allah gives His gift to whom He please. So for you to have Iman, it means that you are blessed. Now what is the khutwat al-shaytan, the footsteps of the shaytan? The footsteps of the shaytan is anything which is against Quran and Sunnah. So anyone who is practicing a religion and the religion is not in accordance to Quran and Sunnah, the religion is not Quran and Sunnah, that person is following the footsteps of the shaitan, and that person is a worshipper of the shaitan. So the only person who doesn't follow the footsteps of the shaitan is a Muslim who belongs to the correct aqidah and he abstains from bid'ah. So any person who is a Muslim and he doesn't practice sunnah, instead he practices bid'ah, he is following the footsteps of the shaitan. So there are Muslims who follow the footsteps of the shaitan. So what about kafir? So every single kafir follows the footsteps of the shaitan. Then Allah said, وَلَا يَأْتَلِ أُولِ الْفَضْلِ مِنْكُمْ وَلَا يَأْتَلِ أُولِ الْفَضْلِ مِنْكُمْ وَسَعَى and يُؤْتُوا أُولِ الْقُرْبَى وَالْمَسَاكِينَ وَالْمُهَاجِرِينَ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. And let not those among you who are blessed with graces and wealth swear not to give any sort of help to their kinsmen, the poor who beg, and those who left their homes for Allah's cause. Let them pardon and forgive. Do you not love that Allah should forgive you? And Allah is oft forgiving, most merciful. Now why did Allah Ta'ala reveal this ayah? And let not those among you who are blessed with graces and wealth swear not to give any sort of help to their kinsmen. Why did Allah reveal this ayah? After the slander of Aisha, Abu Bakr Siddiq radiallahu anhu said, Mr. Ibn Uthatha, I will never give him any of my wealth again. And Abu Bakr Siddiq radiallahu anhu used to give Mr. Ibn Uthatha financial assistance because he was poor. and he was a relative of Abu Bakr as-Siddiq radiallahu anhu. Abu Bakr accused him of participating in the slander of Aisha. Now if a person, if you have wealth, and you used to give your wealth to a Muslim brother, you used to feed him, and somebody slandered your daughter that she committed zina, would you still help that man who slandered your daughter with zina to destroy her and finish her in the society? Show us those who would still give him his money. None of you put up your hand. So you would withhold your assistance from this man. Now this person, Mistah ibn Uthatha, was a relative of Abu Bakr Siddiq radiallahu anhu, and Aisha was slandered, and Abu Bakr said, you were in it. So he said, I never say anything. So why did Abu Bakr say you were in it? He didn't say with his tongue, oh, Aisha committed zina. He didn't say that. So if he didn't say that, why Abu Bakr said you were in it? Abu Bakr accused him, you were in it, because when the people were slandering Aisha, he was there and he laughed, he smiled. He didn't stand up and defend the character of Aisha. He only smiled. He kept quiet and smiled. So when the news reached Abu Bakr's ears that he kept quiet and smiled, Abu Bakr said, you were in it. So the Prophet didn't say to Abu Bakr, you were wrong to judge him as a part of it. The Prophet didn't say that. So what is this telling you? That if you were in a company and somebody was killing the character of your Muslim brother or your Muslim sister, and you did not stand up and defend their character, you smiled. When you smiled, you were in it. Because it means that you are in agreement with it. So Abu Bakr said, you were in it, killing the character of my daughter Aisha, because when they were talking, you smiled. And the Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam said, if somebody is killing the character of your Muslim brother or your Muslim sister, and you defended their character behind their back, you will get the reward of bringing to life a girl child which was buried alive. This is how important it is for you to defend the character of your Muslim brothers and sisters behind your back. So when Abu Bakr said, wallahi, I will never help this man again, he was in it, killing the character of my daughter Aisha, Allah said, وَلَا يَأْتَلِ أُلْفَضْلِ مِنْكُمْ وَسَعَةً أَنْ يُؤْتُوا أُلْقُرْبَى وَالْمَسَاكِينَ وَالْمُهَاجِرِينَ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. And let not those among you who are blessed with graces and well swear not to give any sort of help to their kinsmen, the poor who beg and those who left their homes for Allah's cause. So Mr. Ibn Uthatha left Mecca to go and live in Medina. So, did he have iman or he didn't have any iman? He had iman. Likewise, he participated in the battle of Badr. And what promise did Allah give to those who fought at Badr? Jannah. So, since he made hijrah, he's a muhajir, and he fought at Badr, Allah said, don't swear not to help him again. Forgive him. So, he fought at Badr. And he made hijrah. He made hijrah, then fought at Badr. So what is that telling you? Even though your iman will be sky high, it's possible that you will slip in your character. You will slip in your behavior. Regardless of how much iman you have, it's possible that one day you'll find yourself biting. One day you'll find yourself slandering. Because this sahaba was from, he fought at Badr, he made hijrah, and he slipped in his behavior. He didn't accuse Aisha of zina. All he did was to smile when he heard the slander. He only smiled. And Abu Bakr judged him as a criminal in it. And the Prophet never said to Abu Bakr, Abu Bakr, you are wrong. He wasn't in it. All Allah did was to say, forgive him. Don't swear not to help him. Forgive him. Don't you want Allah to forgive you? If you forgive him, Allah will forgive you. So when Allah revealed this ayah, Allah was correcting Abu Bakr. Abu Bakr said, wallahi, I will never withhold my help from him. I will always help him. And Abu Bakr Siddiq radiallahu anhu continued to help his brother Muslim financially. And the other ayah which I would like to expound upon is ayah, and tell the believing women to lower their gaze from looking at forbidden things and protect their private parts from zina, illegal sex intercourse. Tell the believing males, that is. Tell the believing women. And the ayah before that, قُلِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ يغضوا من أبصارهم and tell the believing men to lower their gaze from looking at haram things and to protect their private parts from zina, illegal sexual intercourse. That is pure for them. Verily Allah Ta'ala is the all aware. He knows what you do. Then in the second ayah, the other ayah, Allah said, tell the believing woman. So Allah Ta'ala forbade the men first because men lust more than women. So because men lust more than women, in this society today, in the world today, you'll find that the dirty magazines contain mostly naked women for men to sit down at their homes and enjoy looking at. These are the perverts. While the other magazines with naked men for women to sit down and look at, these magazines are few in the markets. The majority of the dirty magazines contain naked women for the perverts to sit down and look at. So Allah mentioned men before He mentioned women because men lust more than women. However, Allah mentioned women also to tell you that women, they also lust. So don't entertain the idea that it's only men who lust. Women are guilty of the crime of lusting. And believing women also lust. If believing women with taqwa, women who wear hijab and pray five times a day, if these women did not lust, why would Allah say, tell the believing woman to lower their gaze? So if a believing woman lust, what about a kafir woman? Her lust is a million times more than that of the believing woman. Protect their private parts and be modest, and not to show off their ornaments except only that which appear thereof, meaning the palm of their hands, their face and the palm of their hands. And to draw their garments, their headdress over their head, their outer garments over their head, covering their bosoms, their breast, and also their ears and their necks. Now when you go to certain gatherings, people call themselves Muslims. For example, if you should go to a gathering of Louis Farrakhan, Far Gone, his women, they just rub their heads, and their ears is left out, and their necks are left out. This is called the Rita Mali hijab. Then you have other women, they cover their hair, you can see their hair, but the dress is at the knee length, miniskirt. Or they wear trousers. Some of them, they wear their headdress, but they wear tight Calvin Klein jeans. And they think that, why these women make these blunders? Why? Because they don't understand what is hijab. Nobody explained to these women what is hijab. They think hijab means just to cover the hair. Just to cover the hair is hijab. Then you have other women. They cover the hair, but they wear a t-shirt. And you can see the size of their breast in the t-shirt. And other women, they wear dupatta, a headdress which is worn by Hindu women. And you can see the see-through, you can see their hair through the headdress. Some women came to Aisha in dupatta. They had a hijab which you can see their hair through it. See-through hijab. Aisha turned to the women and said, women who dress like this, they don't believe in Surah Nur. Women who dress like this, they don't believe in Surah Nur. So no woman is supposed to dress in this manner. So what is the proper way for a Muslim woman to dress? A Muslim woman, when she goes out of the house, if she's in the house, she can wear her t-shirt, she can wear her miniskirt. It's no problem, as long as there's no strange men in the house looking at her in that state. Behind closed doors, no problem. She can even wear shorts in her house if she wants, as long as it's herself and her husband alone in the house. But if her children are there, she's not allowed to wear shorts in front of her children. She can only wear shorts in front of her husband. So how a Muslim woman is supposed to dress when she leaves the house? She's supposed to wear abaya. So sirwal, kameez, is halal inside the house, haram outside the house. I repeat, sirwal kameez, which is worn by Asian women, Pakistani women, Indian women, Bengali women, halal inside the house, haram outside the house. So the dress of the Muslim woman should be an abaya, a thick dress, a thick outer garment. And the dress should not be transparent. It should not be a color which is pink, bright red, yellow, because these colors are worn by prostitutes. So the abaya should be black or brown or gray. Unattractive. That which doesn't, in Arabic we say, yulfit another. Tulfit another. It doesn't cause people to look at you. So the abaya should be thick, unattractive in color. And the abaya shouldn't have animal pictures on it. And the abaya should reach her ankles. And the abaya should not be tight fitting. It should be loose fitting. The abaya means the outer garment, the thick dress which she wears over her inner clothing. The abaya should not have any elastic in the waist. The woman who wears her abaya should not wear a belt, because the Prophet ﷺ cursed women who wear belt. Any woman who wears a belt is cursed. And as for the headdress, it should cover her hair. And it should cover her bosom, it should cover her ears, it should cover her neck. And the punishment for a woman who doesn't wear her hijab is that on Judgment Day she'll be hung by her hair. Because when the Rasul sallallahu alaihi wasallam went to Isra and Miraj, he saw some women hung by their breast. When he asked the Rasul, who are these women? These women, they had children from men who are not their husbands, and they blame it on their husbands. Then other women were hung by their hair. And when he asked Jibril, who are these women? Jibril said, these women, they never wear their hijab. These are women of your ummah who refuse to wear their hijab. Now, if you have a wife, a sister, a daughter who doesn't wear hijab, and you, the Muslim man, you see her in that state and you didn't hate it in your heart, that act, it means that you have nullified your shahada, because you did not hate the ma'asiyah, the kufr, the disobedience of Allah Ta'ala. You have to hate it in your heart. And you have to command her to wear her hijab. And a woman will take four men with her to the hellfire. Her husband, her father, her grandfather, and her brother. Because they saw her not wearing her hijab, not praying. And they did not tell her to wear her hijab and pray. So every woman will take four men. Nah? Her husband, her father, her grandfather, and her brother. The eldest son. Did I mention the son? The brother. Her brother. Yeah, her eldest son comes into the game if the husband is dead. He becomes her wali. I repeat. The eldest son comes into the picture if her husband is dead. Or maybe he's alive but he's a murtad. So she divorced. She left him. So the eldest son becomes her mahram. So she'll take these men with her to the hellfire, because they saw her not wearing her hijab. She's shown her hair to every Tom, Dick and Harry, and they didn't correct her. So these men, the reason why they are in hell is because they are called dayyuth. A dayyuth is a man who has no jealousy. And the Rasul said, "La yadkhulu al-jannah ad-dayyuth." A dayyuth will never enter the paradise. And a dayyuth is a man who doesn't see anything wrong with zina. Or he doesn't see anything wrong with a woman going, showing her hair to every Tom, Dick and Harry. He doesn't see anything wrong with that. And if you want to see the youth, go to Central Mosque on Eid Day. You'll see thousands of the youth. This is where the youth, they come out in droves. They come out in droves. So this is the Islamic concept of dress for Muslim women. And as for the men, you are not allowed to wear trousers that are silk. You are not allowed to wear trousers which is tight-fitting. You are not allowed to wear trousers that has animal pictures on it, or shirts with animal pictures. And you're not allowed to wear a silk shirt as well. You're not allowed to wear trousers that is exclusive to the dress of the kuffar, the kafir men. You're not allowed to drag your trousers on the ground out of pride. However, if you wear your trousers below the ankle without pride, it is halal. Even though the scholars have fitna among themselves in regards to wearing the trousers below the ankle. And the Prophet said, anything below the ankle is in hellfire. Then Abu Bakr said, what about me, my trousers below the ankle, my garment? The Prophet said to Abu Bakr, you don't have pride, Abu Bakr. You don't have pride. So some scholars say, if you wear the trousers below the ankle without pride, it's halal to do so. Other scholars say, if you wear the trousers below the ankle with pride or without pride, still you will be in the hellfire for it. So we say to them, what about the hadith of Abu Bakr, when the Prophet said, Abu Bakr, you don't have pride. In other words, you can wear below the ankle, you don't have pride. These scholars say, we don't have the Prophet in our midst today to tell us who have pride and who don't have pride. So none of you can wear your garments below the ankle. I don't know which opinion you prefer. I prefer the opinion of the scholars who say that you're allowed to wear the trousers below the ankle if you don't have pride in your heart. However, if you want to have the opinion of Albani and Ibn Baz that says that you're not allowed to wear the trousers below the ankle with or without pride, I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is when you say that for you to wear the trousers below the ankle is a major kufr that will cause you to be in hellfire, but when the leaders abandon the Sharia and dismantle the Sharia, it's a minor kufr. It's kufr duna kufr. I have a big problem with this nifaq, this hypocrisy. We continue. Allah Ta'ala is hereby making mention of His pious servants. So Allah Ta'ala said in Ayah 36, "Fi buyutin adna Allah and turfa wa yuzkar fiha ismuhu wa yusabbihu lahu fiha bil ghadu wal asal," that in his house, in houses, mosque, the masajids, which Allah has ordered to be raised, to be cleaned, to be honored in them, His name. In these masjids, His name is glorified in the morning and in the afternoons and in the evenings. So Allah Ta'ala is hereby speaking about the masjids, the house of Allah Ta'ala, that in these houses, His name is made mention of. Now, Qurtubi has made many statements in regards to the masjid of Allah Ta'ala. He has expounded on the houses of Allah Ta'ala. So, in this ayah, I will explain what are the rituals of the mosque. First of all, whenever you go to the masjid, it is sunnah to enter the masjid with the right foot. And what do you say when you enter the masjid? Naam. Allahumma iftali abwaba rahmatik. O Allah, open for me the doors of your bounties. And whenever you enter the masjid of Allah Ta'ala, you are not allowed to sit down until you pray two rak'ah to greet the masjid. Now when I say you're not allowed to sit down until you pray two rak'ah, do I mean fard or sunnah? Sunnah. No scholar say fard. No scholar say fard. All the scholars say it is sunnah for you to pray two rak'ah for the masjid. Now, if it is after Asr, are you allowed to pray these two rak'ah or are you not allowed? Huh? According to Abu Hanifa, if it's after Asr, you cannot pray the two rak'ah. But according to Ahmed ibn Hanbal, you're allowed. And the most accurate opinion is that of Ahmed ibn Hanbal, that you're allowed to pray the two rak'ah after Asr, because these two rak'ah is to greet the masjid of Allah Ta'ala. Now, whenever you hear the adhan for the masjid, you have to go. Now, when I say you have to go, is it fard or sunnah? Fard. But if you live far away from the masjid where you don't hear the adhan, then it's not fard for you to go. Because the Prophet said to the blind man, when the blind man said, "I'm blind, how can I go to the masjid?" The Prophet said, "Did you hear the nida? Atasma an nida? Do you hear the adhan?" The man said, "Yes." The Prophet said, "Go to the masjid. I cannot find for you any udhr, any excuse for you not to go to the masjid." Whenever you make wudu, if you hear the adhan for the masjid and you make wudu and you make your steps towards the masjid, every step you take, one sin which you commit is wiped out. And you get one ajr for every single step that you take towards the house of Allah Ta'ala. The Rasul said, anybody who build a house for Allah, a masjid, Allah will build for him a mansion in paradise. Your salah in the masjid is 27 times better than for you to pray at home. So if you pray at home for example, Fajr, you get one ajr. But if you pray in the masjid with your Muslim brothers, you get 27 ajr. And this ruling applies for men, not the women. Now, also, you have to avoid the masjids of the hypocrites. So even though you live beside a masjid where you hear the adhan, you are not allowed to go and pray if it's the masjid of the hypocrites. Now, a hypocrite is a person who built a mosque with intention to spread false Islam. To spread false Islam. Many brothers don't like that expression, false Islam. Because Islam is only the truth. There is no such thing as false Islam. We mean the wrong interpretation of Islam. So the hypocrites in our midst today are people like the Jamaati Ihya Manhaj Sunnah, or called the Salafists. And the reason why they are hypocrites is because they say that to dismantle the Sharia is kufr duna kufr. It's a minor sin. Even though the Ummah, you should read this book, all of you, Jihad of Forgotten Obligation, Ibn Taymiyyah has made mention, that the Ummah of the Prophet, there is ijma among the Ummah, that if you dismantle the Sharia, Ibn Kathir mentioned the ijma as well as Ibn Taymiyyah. Please buy this book, brothers, and read extensively. The ijma of Ibn Kathir and Ibn Taymiyyah is inside this book. The Ummah has agreed that if you dismantle the Sharia, it is a major kufr, and it takes you outside the fold of Islam. However, if a leader chops off the hand of every thief, but then his son steals and he didn't cut off his hand, is he a kafir or a fasik? Fasik. Is that clear? He is a fasik because he never dismantled the Sharia. He only did not cut the hand of his son because of natural instincts. His natural instinct got the better of him. But if the thieves in his country, instead of chopping off their hands, he locked them up in prison for 6 months, is he a kafir or a fasik? Kafir, because he has dismantled the Sharia. So when Tawus said kufr duna kufr, the kufr of the lesser degree, he meant a person who did not implement the Sharia as a one-off on the individual level, not on the level, on the state level where he dismantled the Sharia in its totality. Also, the masjids of the hypocrites, the sunnah is to demolish them or to take them over. Now, the Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam was told not to pray in the masjid. Surah 9, verse 107. Surah Toba 107. The hypocrites, they built a mosque and they beautified the mosque and it looked beautiful, more beautiful than the Prophet's mosque, and they invited the Prophet to pray in it to give it legitimacy. And Allah revealed it not to pray in that masjid. This masjid is called Masjid Dirar. So, for example, the Bareilly, they are not entitled to a mosque. And it's haram for you to pray behind the Bareilly's. And the Bareilly's have apostated from Islam because they put between themselves and Allah Ta'ala an intermediary, calling upon this intermediary instead of Allah Ta'ala, claiming that the intermediary... Could you close the door upstairs, please? Could you close the door, please? Claiming that the intermediary will transmit their dua to Allah Ta'ala. So because of this, the Bareilly's have apostated from Al-Islam. And I've already told you about the Jamaat Ihyam al-Sunnah, that they went against the ijma of the Ummah, that the dismantlers of the Sharia have apostated. They cement the throne of the apostate leaders. So you're not allowed to pray behind them, nor pray in their mosque. And whenever you give away in sadaqah or zakah, it is haram for you to give your sadaqatul fitr, your £2.50, or your yearly zakah to a masjid which is the masjid of the hypocrites. If you do that, you have helped to spread kufr and shirk and bid'ah, and you'll be held accountable for it on judgment day. You are only allowed to give your sadaqah and your zakah to people who implement, practice, carry out the manhaj and the aqidah of Ahlul Sunnah wal Jama'ah. Also, you're not allowed to pray in the masjids of people who say democracy is the way forward, because democracy is the greatest shirk. Democracy is the greatest shirk. So you're not allowed to pray in the masjids of people who say democracy is the way forward. Also, the nation of Kufr, nation of Islam, led by Louis Farrakhan. Let me reiterate that next week we are going to close the door at 8:30. So people who disrespect the halqa and come late, you won't be able to gain entry, inshallah ta'ala. You're not people like Louis Farrakhan, they are not entitled to a masjid. And the extreme Sufis, they are not entitled to a masjid. And these are the masjids of the hypocrites. The masjids of the hypocrites, the extreme Sufis. Did I leave anyone out? The Qadiani, they are not entitled to a masjid. So these masjids, they should be either be demolished or they should be taken over. Now, how do you know an extreme Sufi which you're going to pray behind? Because Imam Ghazali was a Sufi and I would pray behind him. And I think everybody would pray behind him. Umar Mukhtar was a Sufi and I would pray behind him. And I think all of you would pray behind him. So which Sufi are we talking about? The Sufis who built their masjids over the graves. These people are kafirs and you're not allowed to pray behind such a Sufi. Or a Sufi who has contact with the jinns and he predicts the future. For example, Shaykh Nazim Al-Haqqani. If you should go to him, he can tell you your name and your mother's name and your father's name. And he can tell you everything about you even though he only sees you for the first time. Because he has contact with the jinns. And whenever you have contact with the jinns, it makes you become a kafir. So you are not allowed to give your money to these masjids. Neither are you allowed to pray behind these people because they are the extreme Sufis. Also, another sign of an extreme Sufi is that they have the pictures of their sheikh hanging in the masjid. And one day I went to a masjid that was in Peckham, and it reminds me of the days when I was a Christian. Then they have the picture of the man they said is Jesus hanging. It reminds me of where I'm coming from, Christianity. You are not allowed to go to these masjids and pray behind the people. Nor are you allowed to give your money to them. Because if you do so, you have contributed to kufr and shirk and nifaq and bid'ah. And Abu Hanifa said, if you give an egg as donation to the fire worshippers, you have nullified your shahada. So why should you give your money to people who are Brahmins or Salafis or Democrats or Sufis, i.e. the extreme Sufis? So these masjids, you are not allowed to go and you are not allowed to pray behind the people who are there. You are not allowed to have contact with the jinns. Only one man was given that permission, and who is it? Sulaiman. Sulaiman. It's clear that the Rasul sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "The jinn, the shaitan came and I choked him until I can feel the wetness of his tongue in my hand." And if Sulaiman, if I didn't remember the dua of Sulaiman, I would have tied him up for the children of Medina to play with him, to see him. But the Prophet said, this special dua, this, to have dominion over the jinns, is exclusive to Sulaiman. So anybody who have contact with the jinns, he is involved in magic, so he's a kafir outside the fold of Islam, and his blood is halal.
Some people, they're trying to get out you, jinn get through you.
No, that's something different. That's something totally different. That's exorcism, to drive the jinns out of people. This is halal, and it is compulsory on the man who can do it to do so. So this is totally different. I'm speaking about using the jinns to get things for you. When Ibn Taymiyyah was alive, there was a sheikh who used to cohabit with small boys. And then he used to have the jinns bringing things for him, money and food and sweets. And then he said, look, I have supernatural powers. If you read Ibn Taymiyyah's on the jinn, it expounds upon this topic. We are not finished with the masjid, and I wouldn't like to put this tafsir on four castles, so let me go through the tafsir, inshallah ta'ala. The Rasul said, seven people will be beneath the shade of Allah on judgment day when there will be no shade except the shade of Allah ta'ala. The first one is a just ruler. Second man is a man, a beautiful woman from noble birth, invite him to zina, and he says, no, I fear Allah. The third, a man, whenever he gives you anything with the right hand, the left hand doesn't know anything about it. The fourth, a man whose heart is connected to the masjid. So for you, just for you to love the masjid and love going to the masjid, you will be a special person treated with respect by Allah on judgment day. And when everybody will be sweating and they will be drowning in their sweat, Allah will shade you. Why? Because you love the house of Allah, you love the masjid. And the fifth man is two people who exchange visits because they love each other. Al-Wala wal-Bara. Nothing brought them together except for their love for Allah and their love for Islam. And the sixth is a man who he remembers Allah Ta'ala so much that he sheds tear. And did I leave one out? No, I mentioned that. A youth who was brought up in the Shab Nashafi Rahmati Rabbihi. A youth who was brought up in the Ibadah of Allah Ta'ala. A young Muslim who never go astray. He never drink alcohol. He never commit zina. He never take drugs. He never wear silk. He never wear gold. He never listen to music. If you are a young youth and you grew up like that, you never go astray, you will be treated with ultimate respect by Allah Ta'ala on judgment day. So these are the people. Also, it is a very good act for you to sweep out the masjid and keep it clean. A black woman used to sweep out the masjid in the time of the Rasul sallallahu alaihi wasallam. She used to keep it clean, and when she died, the Prophet missed her. So he said, "Where is that woman who used to sweep out my mosque?" They said, "She died and we buried her." The Prophet said, "Imagine you did that and you didn't inform me." And he went to her graveside and prayed over her janaza. And the Prophet said, "The grave is very dark, but when I pray over the dead people, it is filled with light. My salah becomes nur for them in the grave." The masjid is the power base of the Muslims. The masjid is your power base. Spiritually. So when you go to the masjid on Friday and you hear one khutbah, it charges you up for you to survive for another khutbah. It's like a mobile phone. This is your mobile phone. And you need to charge it up for the battery to last you for another 12 or 17 hours. Likewise, the masjid is your charging up. You need to go to the masjid for a proper khutbah, a strong khutbah, to be charged up spiritually, to survive for another 7 days until you come back to the masjid. The masjid is your power base politically. So the imam in the khutbah should speak politics and let the people know who their friends are, who are their enemies. So the masjid is the ultimate weapon of the Muslims, and the masjid is more powerful than an atomic bomb. The masjid, the house of Allah Ta'ala, has more power than an atomic bomb, because this is where the imams deliver their khutbahs to give you iman for you to go to the front line without wavering about jihad. So the masjid is the most powerful power base that we have as Muslims. And because of that, the kuffar, they know that the masjid is our power base. So what they do, before the imam can deliver a khutbah, he has to write it maybe a week before, then send it to the Ministry of Interior, and if it doesn't have any politics in it, for example, if the imam says in the khutbah, Israel is our enemy, they will say the khutbah has failed, you can't deliver the khutbah. But if the khutbah has no politics, it only talks about salah, zakah, and to clip your fingernails, and to shave underneath your beard, your armpit, and so on and so forth, and to circumcise. This is the khutbah they want in the masjid, then they stamp it. Yes, you can give that khutbah. But if you should write a fiery khutbah in which you will wake up the Muslims, you talk about al-wala wal-bara, you talk about tawhid al-hakimiyya, and you talk about jihad, your khutbah will be finished, and you yourself, they will lock you up in prison and throw away the key. So the role of the masjid is viciously undermined. This is why the Muslims are sleeping, because you can't go anywhere in the world today and hear a proper khutbah. Do you know any masjids here in the UK you can go and hear a khutbah that can wake you up? Very few. Because the khutbahs are delivered by Salafists who are hypocrites, and Burailis who are also hypocrites, and Democrats who say democracy is the way forward, and so on and so forth. So the masjid is the most powerful power base of the Muslims, and this is where our iman is nurtured. This is where we gain iman, and this is where our iman is nurtured and protected. Also, the masjid is your spiritual power base, your social power base. Because when you gather in the masjid and you meet each other, whether you are black, white, yellow, brown, Arab, non-Arab, the Islamic brotherhood and sisterhood is enhanced. The masjid sorts you out economically, because when you see your Muslim brother who is poor, he drives to the masjid in an S-Red. You know, the car is 25 years old. You say maybe he's having problems, and you drive with a R-Red or a P-Red. You say, "Brother, is this your situation okay?" And he said, "Oh, I'm having financial difficulties." And you give him some money. So the masjid sorts you out economically. Also, the masjid sorts you out psychologically. Because when you have iman, psychologically you are stable. And the masjid sorts you out mentally. The masjid sorts you out recreationally. Because the sahabas, they used to play in the masjid. Which country did they come from when they were serving the Arabs? What country? And Aisha was watching. Habasha, Ethiopia. They used to play in the masjid of the Rasul Sallam. And Umar wanted to stop them. The Prophet said, "Oh Umar, everybody have Eid. Everybody have celebration. This is our festival day, our Eid. So let them play." And Aisha used to watch them. Aisha said, "I didn't really interested in looking, but because I was on the shoulder of the Prophet, I felt prestige, so I just kept on looking at them." So the masjid is your form of recreation as well. And we continue with the masjid. Hypocrites are not allowed to own masjids. I've already said that. So the sunnah is to take it over or to demolish it. So the masjids of the Qadiani in this country, either you take it over or you plant a bomb in it. It's haram for them to have masjids. Either you bomb it or you take it over. But hypocrites are not allowed to have masjids, because they use the masjid to spread false
Islam, the false version of Islam. Also, you are not allowed to take filth inside the masjid. And the Prophet said, "Man akhraja adha min al-masjid, bana Allah lahu baytan fil jannah." If you take out a filth from the masjid, Allah will build a mansion for you in paradise. Now, this hadith was quoted by Ibn Majah. I don't know if it is strong or if it is weak. Ibn Majah quoted it, and Qurtubi, he didn't comment whether it is strong or weak. However, the strong hadith says, if you build a masjid for Allah in the dunya, Allah will build for you a mansion in paradise. This is in Bukhari, so we are sure it is sahih. One of the signs of the last days is that people will show off in building masjids. So the Rasul said, لا تقوم الساعة حتى يتباهى الناس في المساجد. The day of judgment will never come until people show off in building masjids. So a man will build a masjid and said, oh, I have the biggest masjid, the second biggest masjid in the world. And when you are inside of it, you can look down and you see the sea. You can see the fishes inside the sea swimming around. Where is this masjid? In Morocco. So when I speak, I don't have to call names. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Eh? And the Rasul said they will beautify their masjid and the masjid will be empty. If you go for Fajr, maybe two or three people pray in the masjid. And they spend millions and billions to build it. But the Rasul said the masjid will be empty. So this is a sign before Judgment Day. People will show off in building masjids. And the Rasul said another sign before Judgment Day is that voices will be raised in the masjid. Voices will be raised in the masjid. Because among the Muslims, you have Salafi, then you have Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah, then you have Democrats, then you have Bareilwi, then you have Sufi. Everybody wants to take over the masjid. So since everybody wants to take over the masjid, voices will be raised in the masjid. So people will be throwing punches in the masjid and sometimes guns are drawn in the masjid. And sometimes the police comes in the masjid with his shoes and his dog. You understand? And the dogs drop their shoes in the masjid. This is because people have different aqidah and everybody wants to take over the masjid. Well, if we have a caliph, you will never have deviant groups. Because what the caliphs used to do, the caliph used to send a scholar to debate with the deviant. So if there's a deviant existing in Iraq or in Syria or in Egypt, the caliph would send his top scholar to debate with him publicly, refute him and disgrace him. And when he's refuted and disgraced, then his head is chopped off. And which scholar did this? Al-Awza'i. Al-Awza'i. He said it would be chopped off. So the reason why groups like Salafi and Bareilwi and Sufi and Democrats, you can finish them. They'll never be finished. What can finish them? Who can tell us? The caliph. Only the caliph can finish these deviant groups. So as long as you have no caliphate, voices will be raised in the masjid. And when Omar was the caliph, some men were talking in the masjid and they were raising their voice. And Omar said, where do you come from? They said, Yemen. Omar said, if you had said Medina, I would whip you so harshly. I will give you a whipping which you will never, never, never forget. The three best masjids are as follows. Mecca, Masjid al-Haram. If you pray one salah, you get the barakah of 10,000 salah. So every time you pray in that salah, in that masjid, for example, Fajr, you get the barakah of praying 10,000 Fajr. Secondly, Medina. Every salah you pray in Medina, you get the barakah of 1,000. So if you pray one Fajr in Medina, you get the barakah of praying 1,000 Fajr. And the third masjid is Al-Quds in Jerusalem. Every salah you pray, you get the barakah of praying 500 salah and so on and so forth. Now, menstruating women are allowed to enter the masjid. However, according to Abu Hanifa and Imam Malik and some Shafi'iyya, menstruating women are not allowed to enter the masjid. However, Ahmad ibn Hanbal said as long as they are properly covered and they do not drip in the masjid, they are allowed to enter the masjid and listen to the khutbah. And the most accurate opinion is that of Ahmad ibn Hanbal, because there is no evidence to say that menstruating women cannot enter the masjid of Allah Ta'ala and listen to the khutbah. However, if you want to go along with that of the opinion of Abu Hanifa, I don't have any problem, because I tolerate difference of opinion in regards to fiqh. I don't tolerate difference of opinion in regards to aqidah, but I tolerate difference of opinion in regards to fiqh. So if you agree with Abu Hanifa that menstruating women cannot go into the masjid, I don't have a problem with that. Also, you are not allowed to prevent your women from going to the masjid with one condition. these women that are going to the masjid, they are properly covered. They do not wear lipstick, nor do they wear dubatta, nor do they wear sirwal kameez and so on and so forth. They are properly covered. So as long as the women are properly covered, you are not allowed to stop them from going to the masjid, because the Prophet said, do not stop your women from going to the masjid. And the reason why the scholars put the condition that the woman has to be properly covered before she's allowed to enter the masjid is because Aisha said, if the Prophet should be alive today and see how the women just scantily and go to the masjid, he would have prevented them from going to the masjid. So the condition for them to go to the masjid is that they should be properly covered. Foul smells cannot be in the masjid. So the Rasul said, man akala min hadhihi shajara fala ya'ti al-masjid, al-masajid. Meaning, anybody who eats a thum, what is a thum?
Garlic.
And basal?
Onion.
If you eat thum, which is garlic, and basal, onion, you are not allowed to enter the masjid. So what about a man who is a chain smoker with a stink breath? How can he go to the masjid and offend his Muslim brothers when he stands up in the salah line? Have you prayed behind a smoker in the masjid before? When you stand up in the salah line with that man who's a smoker, you want to vomit. He makes your salah uncomfortable. So these people are not allowed to come to the masjid of Allah Ta'ala with their bad breath, the smokers, and those who eat garlic and basil, which is onion. Kafirs.
ما كان للمشركين أن يعمروا مساجد الله شاهدين على أنفسهم بالكفر. Tawbah 17. It's not for the pagans to go to the masjid. They don't go to the masjid. They are testifying on themselves with kufr. They are bearing testimony that they are kafirs. So a man who takes his shahada, but he doesn't go to the masjid, he doesn't even pray Jumu'ah, is he a Muslim or a kafir? Kafir. He is a kafir. Anybody who doesn't pray is a kafir, especially Jumu'ah. So Allah Ta'ala said that only those who testify, only those who have iman enter the masjid of Allah Ta'ala. Only those with iman enter the masjid of Allah Ta'ala. So when you abstain from the masjid, you are testifying against your own selves that you have absolutely no iman. And the Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam said on many occasions, إِذَا رَأَيْتُمْ الرَّجُلِ يَعْتَرَ الْمَسْجِدِ فَاشْحَدُوا لَهُ بِالْإِيمَانِ إِنَّ اللَّهَ تَعَالَى يَقُولْ إِنَّمَا يَعْمُرْ مَسَاجِدَ اللَّهِ مَنْ آمَنَ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ. The Prophet said, anytime you see a man frequenting the masjid, bear testimony that he has iman. Because Allah said, إِنَّمَا يَعْمُرْ مَسَاجِدَ اللَّهِ مَنْ آمَنَ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ. Because Allah said, verily those who go to the masjid are those who believe in Allah and the last day. You are not allowed to buy and sell in the masjid. You are not allowed to have trading in the masjid. And the tabi'i, some tabi'i allowed it out of extreme circumstances. For example, a person is a traveler. He is traveling from Germany to England. And he brings with him some things to sell to feed himself while he's in England. And he is a poor man who stays over in the masjid. Abir al-Sabil, that man is allowed to sell in the masjid. But as for you taking the masjid as a marketplace, it is haram. Also, if you lose money or anything, you can say in the masjid, I've lost £100. Anybody see my wallet with £100? Because a man lost his camel and he announced it in the masjid. The Prophet said, may you never find it. May you never find it.
As we are ordered to tell anybody. Huh? Same thing. As we are ordered to tell anybody who
put. Yeah, you can. So you're not allowed to allow lost and found in the masjid. You're not allowed to talk dunya topics in the masjid. You are not. Is it people coming to the halqa who is ringing the? But it's 9:30. You are not allowed to talk dunya talks in the masjid. Topics like money, beautiful women, fast cars, credit cards. These topics you are not allowed to discuss in the house of Allah Ta'ala. Or business. However, can you talk politics in the masjid? Yes, because the highest level of politics is what? La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah. This is the highest level of politics. So you're allowed to talk politics in the masjid, because the Rasul said if you wake up one morning and you didn't contemplate on the affairs of your Muslim brothers and sisters in other parts of the world, such a person is not one of us. So you're allowed to talk politics in the masjid to discuss the affairs of the Muslims. Who is ruling the Muslims? The man who is ruling the Muslims, is he a Muslim, is he a kafir? What makes him a Muslim, what makes him a kafir? These things you are allowed to talk in the house of Allah Ta'ala. However, you are not allowed to talk dunya talks in the masjid, like money, women, fast cars, and so on and so forth. Qurtubi has given us many things about the masjid, and I think I have expounded a lot on the masjid. We continue. Allah said, رجال لا تلهيهم تجارة ولا بيع عن ذكر الله وإقام الصلاة وإيتاء الزكاة يخافون يوما تتقلب في القلوب والأبصار. Allah said that the real men are men who neither trade nor sell diverts them from the remembrance of Allah. They have heart. They do not divert from the remembrance of Allah with their heart and their tongue. So the money, the pound sterling, the dollar, the Dutch mark, the yen, regardless of how powerful the currency is, and you're in your shop making your money, your money, this trading cannot divert you from dhikr Allah, the remembrance of Allah, with your heart and your tongue. And even though you're busy making your money, your trading cannot divert you from salah. So Qurtubi said Allah mentioned dhikr first, then Allah mentioned salah, to prove to you that dhikr and salah is two different things. Every salah is dhikr, but not every dhikr is salah. So one is general and one is specific. And Allah Ta'ala said that the trading doesn't stop them from their salah, and their love for their trading did not stop them from paying the zakah. They fear a day when hearts and eyes will be overturned from the horror of the torment of the day of resurrection. So even though it's your natural instinct to love money, to love wealth, your love for your money did not stop you from remembering Allah while you're making your money. Every time you make a pound, you say Alhamdulillah. Every time you make a sale, you say Alhamdulillah. This is the Qadr Allah. And when you hear the Adhan, you go and pray. Allah Ta'ala revealed this ayah, Qurtubi said, because there was a Sahaba in Medina who was trading. And if he have a customer, and hear the Adhan, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, even though he put the thing in the scale to weigh it, as soon as he hear Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, he would put the thing away and go straight to the masjid and close his business. Qurtubi said, this Sahaba was so strong in Iman, that even though he was in the middle of a transaction, as soon as the Adhan was called for the masjid, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, he would stop the transaction in the middle of it. Even though it will be a big transaction where he's going to make a lot of money, as soon as he hear the Adhan, he loved the Adhan so much, he loved the masjid so much, he loved Salah so much, that he would stop the transaction in the middle of it and go straight to the house of Allah Ta'ala. Then Allah said that Allah may reward them according to the best of their deeds and add even more for them out of His grace, and Allah provides without measure to whom He will. لِيَجْزِيَهُمُ اللَّهُ أَحْسَنَ مَا عَمِلُوا وَيَزِيدَهُمْ مِنْ فَضْلِهِ وَاللَّهُ يَرْزُقُ مَنْ يَشَاءُ بِغَيْرِ حِسَابٍ. Then Allah said, as for those who disbelieve, their deeds are like a mirage in a desert. The thirsty one thinks it to be water, until he comes up to it, he finds it to be nothing, but he finds it to be a mirage. Allah finds with him who will pay him his due, and Allah Ta'ala is swift in taking account. Now this ayah is for who? Mother Teresa, Lady Diana, who else? Abu Talib. Should I repeat the ayah? وَالَذِينَ كَفَرُوا أَعْمَالُهُمْ كَسَرَابٍ بِقِيعَةٍ يَحْسَبُهُ الظَّمْأَنُ حَتَّى إِذَا جَاءَهُ لَمْ يَجِدْهُ شَيْئًا وَوَجَدَ اللَّهُ عِنْدَهُ فَوَقَّاهُ حِسَابَهُ فَوَفَّاهُ حِسَابَهُ وَاللَّهُ سَرِيعُ الْحِسَابِ. As for those who disbelieve, their deeds are like a mirage in a desert. The thirsty one thinks it to be water. Until he comes up to it, he finds it to be nothing. But he finds Allah with him, who will pay him his due, which is the hellfire. Waffahu Allah ta'ala. And Allah is swift in taking account. So many kafirs, they do good deeds. Like Mother Teresa, Lady Diana, King Fraud, the Pope of Rome. But when they go on judgment day expecting to find good deeds piled up, Allah said, what did they find? A mirage. It's like the man in the desert about to die from thirst, but when he got there, nothing. It wasn't water, it was only a mirage. So Allah Ta'ala said, لَإِنْ أَحْرَكْتَ اللَّهِ بَطَنَا عَمَلُكَ. If you commit sins, shirk, all your good deeds are nullified. If you commit shirk, all your good deeds are nullified. So in order for your good deeds to be accepted, two conditions have to be found. The first condition is that you have to do it with the proper niyyah, meaning the correct aqidah. The correct aqidah has to be found. And secondly, your good deed has to be in accordance with the sunnah of the Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. But as for the people who do good deeds, the Red Cross and so on and so forth, they have nothing to get on judgment day. They will be in the hellfire. And the best kafir was who? Abu Talib. And where is he? In the hellfire. Because he was a pagan, he wasn't a Muslim. Or the state of a disbeliever is like the darkness in a vast deep sea, overwhelmed with a great wave, topped by a great wave, topped by dark clouds, darkness one above another. If a man stretches out his hand, he can hardly see it. And he for whom Allah has not appointed light, for him there is no light. See you not, O Muhammad, that Allah, he it is whom glorify whomsoever is in the heavens and the earth, and the birds with wings outspread in their flight. Of each one, he Allah knows indeed his prayer and his glorification. Or everyone knows his prayer and his glorification. And Allah is all aware of what you do. So Allah Ta'ala in ayah 41 is telling you that every single thing in the heavens and the earth, they praise Allah Ta'ala. The animals, let's start with the heaven. All the angels in heaven glorify Allah Ta'ala. This is why when Allah said, Inni ja'al fil ardi khalifa, I am about to create a khalifa, a vicegerent on earth. They said, أَتَجْعَلُ فِيهَا مَنْ يُفْسِدُ فِيهَا وَيَسْفِكُ الدِّمَاءَ وَنَحْنُ نُصَبِّحُ بِحَمْدِكَ وَنُقَدِّسُ لَكَ قَالَ إِنِّي أَعْلَمُ مَا لَا تَعْلَمُونَ. Will you put on earth that which will shed mischief, create mischief and shed blood, while we are here celebrating your praise and glorifying you? So the angels, they constantly praise Allah and glorify Allah. Also on earth, the birds in the air, Allah said in the Quran, and the Dabba, the creatures that walk around on 2 feet or 4 feet, they praise Allah Ta'ala. The trees praise Allah. The stone praise Allah. There was a stone in Mecca who used to say, Assalamu alaikum to the Prophet. Every time the Prophet would pass by that stone. And there was a tree that the Rasul used to rest against the tree to give his khutbah. And when his masjid was built and he entered the masjid, what did the tree do? Cry. So the tree is sensitive, and even the tree praise Allah Ta'ala and thank Allah Ta'ala. So everything, even the pig, praise Allah. So the pig has more prestige than a kafir. Because he doesn't lapse in his praise of Allah Ta'ala. Now the kafir, is he on the level of the animal or beneath? What's your evidence? Surah Furqan verse. Furqan 44. In whom illa kal an'am bal hum adal sabila. Furqan 44. It's in another ayah as well. An'am. Surah An'am. I found it in Furqan. In whom illa kal an'am bal hum adal sabila. Surah 25. That is Furqan 44. Allah said the kafirs are like cattle. An'am. Then Allah said bal. But whom they. Whom adal sabila. They are beneath the cattle. So the cattle, the bull, he's not a gay. So the cows, they produce and reproduce and reproduce because he's not a gay. But the kafir, many of them, they are gays. Isn't that so? So they are beneath the cattle. This is why a kafir has no say as to how the dunya should be governed. So you say to him, after you embrace Islam, pay the jizya or be prepared to fight. And if he wants to remain a Christian, he can remain a Christian. We can compromise with Uluhiyya, but we can't compromise with what? Hakimiyya. Very good. Very good. You understand your Tawheed now. If he wants to remain a Christian worshipping Jesus beside Allah, that's, he go astray in regards to what? Uluhiyah. We can say to him, remain a Christian, but pay jizya and give us the key to govern the country. To govern the country in regards to the Sharia. So we compromise in regards to Uluhiyah, but not in regards to what? Hakimiyah. Why we can't compromise with Hakimiyah? Because the kafir is like the an'am. But Allah said he's beneath the cattle. So will you allow a cow to rule you? You can't. This is why we can't compromise in regards to Hakimiyah. So we say to them, either you embrace Islam, pay the jizya, or be prepared to fight. And you hand over the keys to us like what you did to Umar al-Khattab when he entered Jerusalem. You gave the key to Umar and said, rule Jerusalem. Rule. And we will pay you the jizya. Rule Jerusalem in regards to the Sharia. So we cannot compromise in regards to Hakimiyah, because if you compromise in regards to Hakimiyah, the kafir will flood the country with pornography. He'll flood the country with music. He will flood the country with khamr, intoxicant. He will flood the country with dirty magazines and turn the people into perverts. That's why you have pedophiles widespread and rape widespread and drinking and driving widespread and drugs widespread, because the kafir is a pervert. His aqidah is perversion. So everything about a kafir is pervert. So the moment you compromise with Hakimiyah and he mess around with the system, he will spread the country with genetic engineering and cause you to have mad cow disease and feed the cows with meat and cause you to eat meat and think it is meat when you're eating rubbish. When you think you're eating cow, you're eating other things. You understand? And cause you to die from BSC. So any country where the kafirs are ruling, that country is a perverted country, because the Hakimiyah is messed up. Allah is not the lawgiver. The kafir will allow men to cohabit, like what Tony Blair did. Tony Blair said 260 Negro can cohabit. So the kafir, the moment you compromise with Hakimiyah, the society in which you are living is in total turmoil. So we compromise with Uluhiyah. You want to worship Jesus instead of Allah? You continue worshiping Jesus, but hand over the keys to us so that we can govern the country. Give us the key to govern the country in accordance with the Quran. We can't compromise with Hakimiyah, because you're a pervert and you will destroy the country the way you are now destroying the world. Is that clear? So you understand your aqidah now. Then Allah said, and to Allah belongs the sovereignty of the heavens and the earth, and to Allah everyone shall return. Now, Allah Ta'ala said that everything in the heavens and the earth praise Him, Allah Ta'ala. Then Allah said, every single animal know their dua and their salah. The bird know his dua and his salah. So Allah Ta'ala said, قَدْ عَلِمَ صَلَاتَهُ وَتَسْبِيحَهُ. Every single animal, even the snake in the Amazon jungle, knows his dua and his salah. Qurtubi said, when you see the birds doing their wings like this, they are praying salah. And when they sit in the tree and they start to sing, they are doing tasbih. Tasbih. That's what Qurtubi said. Every single animal on earth knows his dua and his salah. Allah said, I teach all these animals their dua and their salah. And the dua of the snake is different from that of the bird. And the dua of the bird is different from that of the lion, and so on and so forth. Everyone has a different salah. Because does the snake have wings? It doesn't have wings. So his salah cannot be like the birds. The birds, when they spray, they do their wings like this. That's what Qurtubi said here in front of me in the tafsir. So the snake, his salah could never be like that of the birds. So Allah said, every single creature on earth, we give them a special salah, a special dua. And your salah is in accordance to how you were created. How you were created. Now the snake, his salah, does it have ruku with his hands over his knees? It doesn't have. So your salah is in accordance to how you are created. Now, we don't know.
Allah only knows.
Oh, no. Qurtubi, he did not specify the dua. He said the motion of the bird. Qurtubi said when the birds do like this, they are praising Allah Ta'ala. And Qurtubi did not give his own opinion. He got it from Ibn Abbas. He got it from Ibn Abbas. So I assume Ibn Abbas got it from who? Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. See you not that Allah drives the clouds gently, then joins them together, then makes them into a heap of layers, and you see the rain comes forth from between them, and He sends down the sky hail like mountains. Are there in the heavens mountains of hail from where He sends down hail, and strike there with whom He will, and averse it from whom He will. The vivid flash of its clouds, lightning, nearly blinds the sight. Allah causes the night and the day to succeed each other. That is, if the day is gone, the night comes, and if the night is gone, the day comes, and so on. Truly, in these things is indeed a lesson for those who have insight, deep insight and foresight. So Allah Ta'ala said, I cause in the clouds together, and then I send rain, causing your crop to germinate, and I cause hail to fall from the mountains. And Qurtubi said, any country where you have tall mountains, it means that the country is a cold country. Because the mountains gather the ice, the avalanche. The Islamic court, to judge with the book of Allah, Quran and Sunnah, if you refuse, you become a kafir. Now if you are in England, and a Muslim brother borrow £10,000 from you, and everything is in writing, and stamped and signature, and when the time comes for him to pay you back, you refuse to pay you back. If you take him to the court of this country, you become a kafir or a Muslim? Yeah? Muslim. Is there any sharia here for you to take him to? Huh? But what if there was sharia here, and you refuse to go to the sharia and go to the kafir court, would you be a Muslim or a kafir? Kafir. Do you understand the difference now? So this ayah, which I've quoted to you, أَلَمْ تَرَ إِلَّذِينَ يَزْعُمُونَ أَنَّهُمْ آمَنُوا بِمَا أُنزِلَ إِلَيْكَ وَمَا أُنزِلَ مِنْ قَبْلِكَ. Can't you see those who claim that they believe in what was revealed to you, O Muhammad, and what was revealed to those before you? That they seek to go after the judgment of the Taghut, even though they were commanded to reject faith in it. So this ayah is talking about a Muslim who had the opportunity to take his Muslim brother to Muslim court, and he refused to take him to Muslim court and take him to kafir court. Then you become a kafir. But if you are here in the UK, the USA, and a man rip you off, first of all, if he was a Muslim, he wouldn't rip you off at £10,000 or $10,000 and refuse to pay you back. Because the Prophet said, La iman liman la amana lahu. Any man who cannot be trusted, he has no iman. Any man who has no trust has no iman. So if a man rips your money off, or he makes passes at your wife behind your back, he's not a proper Muslim, he's a hypocrite. He is a hypocrite. Because the Prophet said, any man who you cannot trust with your wealth, your life, don't kick the light, please, your wealth, your life, and so on and so forth, your family, any man who has no amana, he has no iman. So this man who you take to the kafir courts, if he was a Muslim, not a hypocrite, if he was a Muslim, there would be no need for you to take him to the kafir court. Because if you quote the Quran and Sunnah to him, he would give you back your money without arguing with you. So if a person take a Muslim to the kafir court to get back his money, for example, he did not become a kafir because he was living in Darul Harb, where there was no sharia for him to take him to in the first place. So you cannot use this ayah to beat your Muslim brothers and sisters over their heads. Yeah?
Can we get some brother to judge between us?
No, he's a hypocrite. And if you use a Muslim...
Wait, keep quiet,
please. No, let me explain. In the question and answer session, because I have to finish the tafsir. If you take him to the Muslim judge, a Maulana, a Sheikh, a Mufti, and he laughs and says, this is the UK, this is the USA, this is the Caribbean, there's no sharia, what this sheikh is going to tell me to pay you back the money? Who's going to force me to pay it back? So he laughed at you and said, the sheikh doesn't have the power to let me pay you back. So he's taking the mickey, ridiculing Quran and Sunnah. And if you find out that he is ridiculing Quran and Sunnah, and then you take him to the kafir court, you didn't do anything haram, because you have six sacred things. Damn, your life. Mal, your wealth. Ird, your honor. Nasab, or nasal, your lineage. Fifth, your aql, your intellect. And sixth, your deen. So you're allowed to protect these things by any means necessary. And this is the most accurate opinion in regards to this issue. Even though some people may say, let the $10,000 go, or the £10,000, don't bother to take him to the kafir court. I've met many brothers who say that. Many brothers, this is their opinion. Just call it off. Let the £10,000 go. Don't bother to take him to the kafir court. Now, I can't say something without giving you evidence, can I? So the statement I've made that you can take him to the kafir court to get back your £10,000 if he rip you off, I have to give you evidence, isn't that so? The evidence is from Sunnah. And that is, two Jews committed zina in Medina, and what did the Prophet use to stone them? Which book that is? The Torah. The Prophet said, bring your own book. Let us see what your own book said about two people who commit adultery. And when the Jew was reading, and he reached the part where it says stone them to death, what did he do? Hide it with what? His hand. But the Prophet still stoned them to death. So what the Prophet did, he used the Torah, their own book, proving to them that their own book says stone to death those who commit adultery and stone two Jews to death. Now in the English law or the American law, don't they have a law that says thou shalt not steal? Yes. So if this law, thou shalt not steal, does it coincide with Quran or it doesn't coincide? It coincides. So if you take them, if you take a Muslim brother for them to judge with that aspect, just that aspect, thou shalt not steal, to get back your money, you didn't do anything wrong. Are you happy with the evidence I've given you? Are you happy with the evidence? Are you happy with the evidence? The scholars of Tafsir said this ayah is implemented when there is no Sharia in that situation. Another evidence is when the Muslims were in Habasha, two Muslims had a problem and the Negus judged between them. We'll continue. If you have questions, could you please leave it for the question and answer session because I have to finish the tafsir. Is there a disease in their hearts or do they doubt or fear lest Allah and His Messenger should wrong them in judgment? Nay, it is they themselves who are the Dhalimun. So they have a disease in their heart and the disease is nifaq, hypocrisy. The only saying of the faithful believers when they are called to Allah, which is the Quran, and to the Messenger, which is Sunnah, to judge between them, is that they say, we hear and we obey. And such are the successful who will live forever in paradise. Live forever in paradise. So the believers, when they are called for Allah to judge between them, they hear and they obey. They don't say, we hear, but we disobey. They hear and obey. So anytime you have a problem with your Muslim brother, you should take him to be judged in the Muslim court. If you have Sharia to take him and you refuse the Sharia and go after the man-made laws, you're a kafir and your blood is halal. What's our evidence that your blood is halal if you shun the Sharia and go to a man? The evidence is when Umar chops off the head of the man. When the Prophet gave him the answer, he said to Abu Bakr, what's your opinion? Abu Bakr said, did you ask the Prophet? The man said, yes, but I still want your opinion. Abu Bakr shunned him. He went to Umar. Umar said, did you ask the Prophet? The man said, yes, but I still want your opinion. Umar said, wait, I'll bring you my opinion. He went, took his sword and chopped off his head. I said, this is my opinion for any man who shunned the opinion of the Rasul and seek after the opinion of an ordinary human being. And when Umar chopped off his head, not a single Muslim in Medina said, Umar, why did you kill him? Because he's a clear hypocrite. How can you shun Quran and Sunnah and seek after the opinion of an ordinary human being? So this man pronounced takfir on himself. He made takfir on himself. And guess what? Most of the Muslims in this country today, you don't have to make takfir on them because they make takfir on themselves as soon as they open their mouth. Either they say democracy is the only way forward, or either they say if you dismantle the Sharia, it's not a big sin, it's a minor sin. Or either they say you can make dua to the Sheikh for him to take your dua to Allah Ta'ala. Every time they open their mouth, they make takfir on themselves, so you don't really have to make takfir on them. All you who believe, say obey Allah and obey His Messenger. But if you turn away, He, the Messenger Muhammad SAW, is only responsible for the duty placed on him, that is to convey Allah's message, and you for that placed on you. If you obey Him, you shall be on the right guidance. The Messenger's duty is only to convey the message in a clear way, that is to preach it in a plain way. Allah has promised those among you who believe and do righteous good deeds that He will certainly grant them succession to the present rulers in the earth. If you believe and do righteous deeds, He will grant you succession to the present rulers. So the present rulers which you have, the so-called Muslim rulers, if you believe and do righteous deeds, Allah will make you overthrow them. Allah will give you the power to overthrow them. But the reason why you can't overthrow them is because your iman is dodgy, the belief is not there, and your deeds aren't proper. I've met people in this country who don't like the government in their country, whether it is Libya or Saudi Arabia, Kuwait. And when I question them, so what is the solution to the problem in Saudi Arabia? They say democracy. We need free election, multi-party system. So what do you want? Brothers to be in Mecca, Holy Mecca and Medina? Democracy, that's what you want? He wants democracy. So I said to him, brother, King Fahd is better than you. Wallahi, King Fahd is better than you. At least he doesn't believe in democracy. So most of the oppositions who are operating here in the UK, who want to overthrow the government that they have back home, whether it is Algeria, Libya, Saudi Arabia, most of them, they cannot do what they want to do to overthrow the present rulers because their iman is dodgy. They are Democrats. They are deviated. And they don't have righteous deeds. Some of them, they smoke, they drink, they gamble, they look at blue films. Because these people, they come to the West and they study in the universities of the West. So they are westernized. So they went back to Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, Libya, and they rebel against the system, not because there's no Sharia there, but because they want Saudi Arabia to be like the UK. They want Libya to be like the USA. So their manhaj is democracy. So anytime I meet these people, I always tell them, look, Gaddafi is better than you. At least he doesn't believe in democracy. You're a Democrat. You're a Kafir. At least Gaddafi doesn't believe in democracy. He dismantled the Sharia, but he doesn't believe in democracy. And what Gaddafi has in Libya is better than what you are planning to bring to Libya. So Allah Ta'ala said, for you to gain succession to the present rulers, لَيَسْلَخْلِفَنَّ أَلَدِينَ مِنْ قَبْلِكُمْ. For you to gain succession to the present rulers is that you have to believe and work righteous deeds. That He will certainly grant them succession to the present rulers in the earth. And He granted it to those before them. The same way He granted it to those before you. Mean Abu Bakr Umar, Uthman Ali. Qurtubi said this ayah meant Allah will give you power on earth. Allah will give you khilafah on earth. The way He gave it to those before you, meaning Abu Bakr, Umar, Uthman, Ali. These are the four rightly guided caliphs. And there's a fifth rightly guided caliph. Who is it? Okay, Umar. Which is the other one I was thinking of? Hassan. Hassan, the Prophet's grandson. Hassan. So these are the rightly guided caliphs. Abu Bakr, Umar, Uthman, Ali. And Hassan. Because the Prophet said, my caliphate, Khilafatul Nubuwa, will be how many years after me? 30 years. And after that, what will we have? Kingship in the land. So Muawiyah was a king. Muawiyah was a king. And he was the first to establish kingship on the land. And it's haram for you to be without a caliph for more than 3 days. If 3 days pass and you have no caliph, the shaitan is your caliph. So who's our caliph right now? The shaitan is our caliph. This is why the USA can bomb Iraq as they feel like. And they can bomb Libya when they feel like. They can go in the Holy Land and set up a military base when they feel like. Impose themselves upon Saudi Arabia and set up a military base. So the shaitan is your caliph. This is why the Muslim world is in a mess. The Prophet died on a Monday and he was buried on a Thursday. Why did they keep his body above earth for 3 days? To decide who should be the caliph. Whether it is Abu Bakr, Umar, Uthman, Ali, Ubaydullah ibn al-Jarrah, Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas, or so on and so forth. To decide who should be the caliph. So if 3 days pass and you have no caliph, the shaitan is your caliph and the whole ummah is living in sin. And right now, it is fardul ain upon every single Muslim to work towards the establishment of the caliphate. And the establishment of the caliphate should be with jihad. It's not through democracy. And it's not the leaflet manhaj. Like Hizb ut-Tahrir say, just leaflet the place and the caliphate will come. Just spread leaflets. And when they see the leaflets, they will tremble and give you the keys to rule the country. So if you leaflet London and Tony Blair sees so many leaflets, he'll give you the key to 10 Downing Street. Now these people, they are shouting Khilafah, Khilafah, Khilafah. And they are smoking, clean-shaven, smoking, listening to Zina music, And some of them look at porn magazines and videos, and they expect the Khilafah to be given to them by Allah. Are they taking the mickey on Allah Ta'ala? You scream Khilafah, 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 and you're a smoker, and you didn't even say smoking is makruh, you say mubah. You listen to zina music, you're clean shaven. And some of you look at blue flames, and you think that Allah will use you to establish the Khilafah system. You don't even deserve the honor to clean out the toilet of the caliph. Because you may smoke in there. You don't even deserve that honor. Much less for Allah to give the caliphate to you. And the conditions for the caliphate is that the caliph should be a Muslim. He should be a male. He should be mature. He should be hur, not a slave or a prisoner. So if the caliph was put into prison, his caliphate is batil. I repeat, Muslim. And of course from Ahlus Sunnah wal Jama'ah. And he should be mature, male. And he should be a free hur. And he should not have any ailments like he's a cripple or he's blind. And he should be a mujtahid, a scholar of Islam who can pass fatwas. And he should have knowledge of jihad. Because all the caliphs, Abu Bakr, Umar, Uthman, Ali, these were warriors who fought on the front line for Islam. These are the conditions of the caliphate. And some scholars add another condition. He should be from Quraysh. He has to be from Quraysh. I don't accept that condition. I'm sorry. I don't accept that condition. Because when the hadith says the khilafah, the caliphate should be from Quraysh, that was for that time. Are you saying that the caliphate of the Ottoman Empire, the Turks, is no caliphate? Because I met Arabs who said the Turkish Empire, it wasn't any caliphate because they were not Arabs from Quraysh. I don't accept the condition that the caliph has to be from Quraysh. Because the Prophet said in the last days, the Khilafah system will be snatched from Quraysh. And the Prophet didn't say in the hadith, when the people snatch the caliphate from the Quraysh, it won't be a caliphate afterwards. So I don't accept the opinion that the caliphate has to be from Quraysh. The caliphate should be from the following with the following conditions: Muslim, male, mature, hur, meaning he's free, mujtahid, a scholar of Islam who can pass fatwas. And the reason why he has to be a mujtahid, a scholar, is because if you have a shura meeting and there are 10 people in the shura meeting and 9 of them went against him, the caliph, and he was the only one who had that opinion, he can flush your opinion down the drain and follow his opinion. And who did this? Abu Bakr Siddiq. So if you have a caliph and in the shura meeting you said yes and the caliph said no, 9 of you against him by himself, he can flush your opinion down the drain, the 9 of you, and go along with his opinion, as long as his opinion was the closest to Quran and Sunnah. This is why the caliph has to be a mujtahid, a scholar of Islam, who has the power to pass his own fatwas. And he has to have knowledge of jihad, because sometimes he has to lead the Muslims to battle. These are the conditions of the caliphate. And whenever you lose your caliph, you have to use jihad to replace the caliphate. You can't use the ballot. It has to be the bullet. That's our manhaj. The bullet, not the ballot. And you cannot use dawah, because the kafirs will not listen to your dawah. The only language they understand is force. And the condition under which we are living right now, without the caliph, for 3 years the Muslims suffered it. Between the years 666 to 669, 3 years, they had no caliph. The Tatars came and killed the caliph in Baghdad. And they rose up. They didn't say, we have no caliph, so we can't do jihad. Because some evil ones in this country say you need a caliph for jihad. Isn't that so? The hypocrites in this country say you need a caliph for jihad. What did they do? They rose up and fought the Tatars, kicked them out of Baghdad, and replaced the caliph. Even though they killed the caliph Mu'tasim, they replaced another Muslim who was alive and said, you will be our caliph. You are the most learned. You are the most pious. You become our caliph. For 3 years, the Muslims had no caliph. And they fought the Tatars, kicked them out of Baghdad, and replaced the caliph. So where did you get your dodgy aqidah from that we need a caliph for jihad? You don't need a caliph for jihad. You need a caliph for offensive jihad. You don't need a caliph for defensive jihad. So Allah Ta'ala has promised that if you have taqwa, if you believe and work righteous deeds, He will give you succession to the present rulers, meaning He will let you overthrow these rulers, these tyrants who are ruling you. He'll give you a caliphate the way he gave caliphate to Abu Bakr, Omar, Uthman, Ali, Hassan, those who came before you. As he granted it to those before them, and that he will grant them in the grant them the authority to practice the religion that is he has chosen for them. And the only religion which Allah has chosen is Al-Islam. And he will surely give them in exchange a safe security after their fear, provided they believe, worship me, and do not associate anything as partners with me. But whoever disbelieve after this, they are the fasiqun, the rebellious ones. And offer prayer perfectly, and pay your zakah, and obey the messenger Muhammad SAW, that you may receive mercy from Allah. Consider not that the disbelievers can escape in the land. Their abode shall be the fire to abide therein forever, the worst indeed of destinations. So Allah said, the kafirs that you see living on earth, don't expect that they will escape me. They will be punished by me. There is no therein forever, the worst indeed of destinations. So Allah said, the kafirs that you see living on earth, don't expect that they will escape me. They will be punished by me. There is no escape for them. O you who believe, let the USA can bomb Iraq as they feel like. And they can bomb Libya when they feel like. They can go in the Holy Land and set up a military base when they feel like. Impose themselves upon Saudi Arabia and set up a military base. So the shaitan is your caliph. This is why the Muslim world is in a mess. The Prophet died on a Monday and he was buried on a Thursday. Why did they keep his body above earth for 3 days? To decide who should be the caliph. Whether it is Abu Bakr, Omar, Uthman, Ali, Ubaydullah ibn al-Jarrah, Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas, or so on and so forth. To decide who should be the caliph. So if 3 days pass and you have no caliph, the shaitan is your caliph and the whole ummah is living in sin. And right now it is fardul ain upon every single Muslim to work towards the establishment of the caliphate. And the establishment of the caliphate should be with jihad. It's not through democracy. And it's not the leaflet manhaj. Like Hizb ut-Tahrir say, just leaflet the place and the caliphate will come. Just spread leaflets. And when they see the leaflets, they'll tremble and give you the keys to rule the country. So if you leaflet London and Tony Blair sees so many leaflets, he'll give you the key to 10 Downing Street. Now these people, they are shouting Khilafa, Khilafa, Khilafa. And they are smoking, clean shaven, smoking, listening to Zina music. And some of them look at porn magazines and videos. And they expect the Khilafa to be given to them by Allah. Are they taking the mickey on Allah Ta'ala? You scream Khilafa, 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 Khilafa. And you're a smoker. And you didn't even say smoking is makruh. You say mubah. You listen to Zina music, you're clean shaven. And some of you look at blue flames. And you think that Allah will use you to establish the Khilafah system. You don't even deserve the honor to clean out the toilet of the caliph. Because you may smoke in there. You don't even deserve that honor. Much less for Allah to give the caliphate to you. And the conditions for the caliphate is that the caliph should be a Muslim. He should be a male. He should be mature. He should be hur, not a slave or a prisoner. So if the caliph was put into prison, his caliphate is batil. I repeat, Muslim. And of course from Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah. And he should be mature, male. And he should be a free hur. And he should not have any ailments like he's a cripple or he's blind. And he should be a mujtahid, a scholar of Islam who can pass fatwas. And he should have knowledge of jihad. Because all the caliphs, Abu Bakr, Omar, Uthman, Ali, these were warriors who fought on the front line for Islam. These are the conditions of the caliphate. And some scholars add another condition. He should be from Quraysh. He has to be from Quraysh. I don't accept that condition. I'm sorry. I don't accept that condition. Because when the hadith says the khilafah, the caliphate should be from Quraysh, that was for that time. Are you saying that the caliphate of the Ottoman Empire, the Turks, is no caliphate? Because I met Arabs who said the Turkish Empire, it wasn't any caliphate because they were not Arabs from Quraysh. I don't accept the condition that the caliph has to be from Quraysh. Because the Prophet said in the last days, the Khilafah system will be snatched from Quraysh. And the Prophet didn't say in the hadith, when the people snatch the caliphate from the Quraysh, it won't be a caliphate afterwards. So I don't accept the opinion that the caliphate has to be from Quraysh. The caliphate should be from the following conditions. Muslim. male, mature, hur, meaning he's free, mujtahid, a scholar of Islam, who can pass fatwas. And the reason why he has to be a mujtahid, a scholar, is because if you have a shura meeting, and there are 10 people in the shura meeting, and 9 of them went against him, the caliph, and he was the only one who had that opinion, he can flush your opinion down the drain and follow his opinion. And who did this? Abu Bakr as-Siddiq. So if you have a caliph, and in the shura meeting, you said yes, and the caliph said no, 9 of you against him by himself, he can flush your opinion down the drain, the 9 of you, and go along with his opinion, as long as his opinion was the closest to Quran and Sunnah. This is why the caliph has to be a mujtahid, a scholar of Islam, who has the power to pass his own fatwas. And he has to have knowledge of jihad, because sometimes he has to lead the Muslims to battle. These are the conditions of the caliphate. And whenever you lose your caliph, you have to use jihad to replace the caliphate. If you can't use the balat, it has to be the bullet. That's our manhaj. The bullet, not the balat. And you cannot use dawah, because the kafirs will not listen to your dawah. The only language they understand is force. And the condition under which we are living right now, without the caliph, for 3 years the Muslims suffered it. Between the years 666 to 669, 3 years, they had no caliph. The Tatars came and killed the caliph in Baghdad. And they rose up. They didn't say, we have no caliph, so we can't do jihad. Because some evil ones in this country say you need a caliph for jihad. Isn't that so? The hypocrites in this country say you need a caliph for jihad. What did they do? They rose up and fought the Tatars, kicked them out of Baghdad, and replaced the caliph. Even though they killed the caliph Mu'tasim, they replaced another Muslim who was alive and said, you will be our caliph. You are the most learned. You are the most pious. You will become our caliph. For 3 years, the Muslims had no caliph. And they fought the Tatars, kicked them out of Baghdad, and replaced the caliph. So where did you get your dodgy aqidah from that we need a caliph for jihad? You don't need a caliph for jihad. You need a caliph for offensive jihad. You don't need a caliph for defensive jihad. So Allah Ta'ala has promised that if you have taqwa, if you believe and work righteous deeds, He will give you succession to the present rulers, meaning He will let you overthrow these rulers, these tyrants who are ruling you. He'll give you a caliphate the way He gave caliphate to Abu Bakr, Omar, Uthman, Ali, Hassan, those who came before you. As He granted it to those before them, and that He will grant them the authority to practice their religion, that is, He has chosen for them. And the only religion which Allah has chosen is Al-Islam. And He will surely give them in exchange a safe security after their fear, provided they believe, worship Me, and do not associate anything as partners with Me. But whoever disbelieve after this, they are the fasiqun, the rebellious ones. And offer prayer perfectly, and pay your zakah, and obey the Messenger Muhammad SAW, that you may receive mercy from Allah. Consider not that the disbelievers can escape in the land. Their abode shall be the fire to abide therein forever, the worst indeed of destinations. So Allah said, the kafirs that you see living on earth, don't expect that they will escape Me. They will be punished by Me. There is no therein forever, the worst indeed of destinations. So Allah said, the kafirs that you see living on earth, don't expect that they will escape Me. They will be punished by Me. There is no escape for them. O you who believe, there is no here in forever, the worst indeed of destinations. So Allah said, the kafirs that you see living on earth, don't expect that they will escape Me. They will be punished by Me. There is no escape for them. O you who believe, let